And now you know. I don't know if anybody's looking to do the screen sharing, but I'm going to get that started as well.
I've got it open. I'd like to play along.
Awesome. You're going to get to see my screen.
Hillary.
Hello, Hillary.
Hello.
This is Brittany. It looks like we have a handful of people on the call already.
So I'm calling in on my phone and I'm on the screen, and so it says Mick Moore and Hillary. Those are both
yeah. Exactly. Perfect. You're
hey,
seeing my screen.
Hey, it's Monica.
Hey, Monica. Brittany here. Can we find out if we have either Sam and Kendall on the phone yet? We'll wait.
Oh, hey, it's Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Hello.
Hello. How many people are doing the at-home version, the following along, I guess?
I am, Hillary.
Hi, Mon.
Great. Everybody can see the console?
Yep.
Cool. Who else do we have on the call now, just so I can get a sense? Hello, welcome to the call.
Hi, it's Kendall Jackman from Picture and Homeless.
I'm Sam.
Hello, PTH. Welcome to the call.
What's up, peoples?
Hello.
I hear there's five people here.
Is that it? I feel like we had a couple extra people jump on, too.
But Peter Sabonis just jumped on.
Oh, Peter. So far I have Kendall and Sam, Damian, Hillary, Frank, Monica, myself, Peter, and who else?
Rob.
And Rob.
What up, Rob?
Great.
What's going on?
Rob, I got to apologize. We had, I know you called Adrian earlier, we had some less than stellar phone transferring skills on display in the office.
Not a problem. No biggie.
I just slow-mo just entering the call. Hi.
Hello. Welcome to the call.
How you doing? Sorry?
I said welcome to the call. We're just waiting for a few more minutes for everyone to join. I think we're still expecting a couple more.
Cool. I'm just on 4th Avenue in Brooklyn, so I'm going to put it on mute. But if you need any me to chime in, just let me know and I'll turn it off.
Cool. Sounds good.
Brittany, for our portion, for the PowerPoint presentation, is it cool if you operate it and Kendall and I will yell beep every time we want to
yeah.
change to the next slide?
That sounds perfect. That
awesome.
Is my plan. I got it all ready to go.
Awesome.
See how functional we can do tag team. Is everybody cool if we give folks, I don't know, what? 2-3 more minutes?
Yeah, sure.
We can do a 7-minute delay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Does anybody else want to announce their presence? So far I have Monica, Brittany, Peter, Rob, Frank, Hillary, Damien, Kendall, and Sam, Shlomo, and anybody else?
Hey, this is Max. I just got on.
Hello, Max.
And I'm going to be on a 10-second delay.
Cool. No problem. We're just waiting a few more minutes. Are they either tuning in with for the screen share, or do they have copies of the PowerPoint presentations? There should be two of them.
Screen share.
Uh-oh. I gotta turn that off, huh? perfect. Okay. I think I have the recording going on, so. Did somebody just join?
Yeah, Rachel.
Hi, Rachel. This is Brittany. Cool. We're just waiting, I think, 2 more minutes, according to my clock. I'm giving people a 7-minute delay to jump on. For those following at home, you get to follow my... Cool. All right. I think,
did you know how to
mute
before you start?
Do I what?
Do you know how to mute before you start?
Yeah, maybe I should do that, huh? Let's see if
I
can.
No, I should. I want to do it. If you can figure out how to tell me to...
Oh, you want
to
do it yourself?
Yeah,
Rob Robinson, are you available? Or I can just individually mute you. I don't know how to do the...
You each have a meeting dashboard screen. At the top of that screen, you can mute yourself.
Isn't it
I don't have it.
Per 6 or something?
Can you mute me, please?
Yeah.
I can't. I'm on the road.
No problem. What number are you calling in from?
786-556.
Okay, cool. You are muted. All right. So, everybody, I just want to get started. I have so far, I'm just going to start with a really quick attendance. I have Monica, Brittany, Peter, and Rob. I have Frank, Hillary, Damian, Kendall, and Sam, Shlomo, Mac, Rachel, and do we have anybody else with us?
Anna.
Great. Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Okay. So I'm just going to kick this off. For those following along, you'll be seeing my screen. And there should also be PowerPoints out there that you can follow along with. We're going to start with the third way model PowerPoint. My name is Brittany Scott, and I'm with the National Economic and Social Rights Initiative. I'm the Human Right to Housing Coordinator. There, and my interest is, of course, human rights, so I see them and I'm interested in them as a guidance and a measuring stick for what is and can be transformative. I'm going to quickly introduce some proposed ideas for this spring and hand it off to Picture of the Homeless to really go into and explain a key piece of this, which is community land trusts. So, that said, a quick review. What is it that we seek to achieve? Well, when we talk about the human right to housing, some of the things that we believe that means is community control over land, inclusion in economic development, human needs are prioritized before profits, and that we're free from harassment and forced evictions. Some of the ways that we have thought about how we might get there has been really modeling what a third way of land control could look like, as well as significant organizing to fundamentally transform land relationships and win public policy initiatives. This spring, we believe that it's a historic opportunity to lock in some model wins. And what we mean by that is going to really be the focus of this presentation. So where are we today? We really think of only really two ways in which land is owned. Often it's either privately owned, such as with a bank, a corporation, a homeowner, or a speculator, or less and less common, publicly owned by the government, which would include, whether or not it's a post office or a public housing or a park or a library. But increasingly, these two things are really looking a lot alike. Government's making decisions like a corporation, or they're selling off land to the private market. So this is why we're really focusing on the third way today, and the key to that is really community control, you know, whether or not really bringing democracy into the mix. All right. It's also extremely important to look out for some key additional elements that we believe are essential to transformation, which we identify as human rights elements, in addition to really structuring things to ensure that community-based, democratic, inclusive decision-making is a part of the structure. We also believe that there should be local needs that are met first. Individual contributions are based on their ability to pay, so that nobody based on their employment status is left out, and also that affordability is preserved by preventing really profiteering. And then lastly, something that we call secure tenure, which really just means providing protection from forced eviction, particularly due to market forces and development. So that said, we're going to jump right into some of the three of them, proposed models for how we might lock in transformative wins with a focus on community control. So the first question that we want to ask in each of these models is, who owns the land? In this first case, model number one, a nonprofit would own the land, so there would really be no existing community land trust to work with, potentially, is the idea. But the 501c3 can accept donated land and ensure that it's kept off the market through restricting the resale of the land and really owning the land in perpetuity off the market. And ultimately, although the nonprofit is not democratically accountable to the community, it can issue a ground lease. And that means, ultimately, that the land continues to be owned by the nonprofit, but that the improvements on top of it would actually be owned by the democratic community partnership, whatever that might be. And the idea is that the ownership of land and the ownership of the improvements are like a house, for instance, are divided. And at least the improvements in this situation could be democratically owned. So here's some of the ideas of what we are thinking of when we talk about democratic community partnership, sort of the essential piece being that directly impacted communities would have a vote, a democratic participation in the use of that. And then there's some other considerations also on the PowerPoint. In the second model, the land itself would be democratically owned, whether through a 501c3 or some other structure that's used to ensure this. But essentially, it would be able to do the same thing, keep the land off the market, and because the land is democratically owned, the community would be able to lease the land and ultimately provide ownership to the improvements to a variety of bodies, whether or not it's a homeowner, a cooperative, a nonprofit. And with that, providing the ability to own with some certain responsibility for that owner of the home, for instance, or whatever it might be, responsibilities around taxes, repairs, improvements, but also because the land would still be owned by the community partnership, the community could actually kind of restrict certain things like the use, like require that the owner actually occupy the premise as opposed to having somebody who's external. And then also they could restrict the resale, which is a key to what I think Picture the Homeless will cover. And then lastly, the third model would be a little bit like the second model in that the land would actually be democratically owned. So there'd be community control of the land through some sort of structure. And they'd be able to keep it off the market. And the difference here is that the improvements on top are actually rented, either to an individual, nonprofit, or also even like a business. So really whoever would, in this rental relationship, the democratic community partnership would actually continue to own both the land and the improvements and simply rent out for whatever reason the improvements on top. At this point, that's my piece, so I wanted to just open up really quickly to any questions and then be able to pitch it off to Picture the Homeless. Are there any questions at this point?
Looks great.
Cool. All right. If nobody has any questions, we can go ahead and jump into the Picture the Homelesses. Piece.
Which now I'm feeling an inferiority complex about because I feel like our PowerPoint looks significantly less awesome than the one you all put together.
No. We don't have that brilliant blue.
Well, there's that. So, Brittany, can you take us to the first, I guess the second page that says Y Community Land Trust?
Yes.
Kendall, do you want to kick us off?
Okay. Several years ago, members of Picture Homeless identified CLTs as a solution to lack of housing permanently affordable to extremely poor. And we began to work towards creating one here in New York City. NYC has thousands of vacant properties, which you can read about in our report, both vacant land and vacant buildings, and Housing Not Warehousing campaign has been working to inventory vacant properties and develop a plan for their use. Deep.
So we've been privileged to work with and know folks like from the Cooper Square Community Land Trust for a really long time. Our members have been working closely with them since 2004. They've you know, sort of provided a lot of guidance to us, and we've been really thinking hard for a really long time about community land trusts. So we're going to try to share with you all some of what we've learned and what we're working on. The interesting thing about community land trusts is it's a very diverse model. There's lots of different kinds. They can look very different in different places. So if folks have different experiences or know or think that there are different highlights about different examples, you know, definitely we should talk about that in the Q&A section because some of it, what others might think of as a CLT might look a little different. Beep.
All right, so as the slide says, we were in a class last semester with Professor John Krinsky, who happened to have written a report in 1996 on CLTs and mutual housing associations. And he decided he wanted to partner with us. So we had a class last semester with some of his students and half, eight members of PTH. We're getting ready to start sending out a survey to the CLTs that are still in existence from his report, and I believe it's 30 one of the young ladies was able to find around the country. And we're doing this to see who works with our population of $20,000 and less and what their model is and how they've set up so we can start examining different ways of looking at setting up something here in New York City. It says Tom Ngadi is our one of our partners. He helped us with the count, and Dr. Marcuse has been one of our rallying points and one of the folks pushing this for a long time. Beep. Can't say beep.
So, you know, the Community Land Trust model was born out of a search for creative and innovative ideas to address the housing problem at the time. It has roots in rural Georgia and incorporates, it incorporates stuff from economic thinkers and other folks like Henry George, Ebenezer Howard, Arthur Morgan, and Ralph Borsati, as well as things like land and village gift movement, which was part of how folks in India were able to gain control of the land after the transition from colonial rule. We've identified like nearly 190 CLTs that have existed or are still existing. There's a really interesting study by the Lincoln Institute, which we cite for a lot of our sort of more general background in this presentation, which is pretty easily Googleable. I don't think there's a link directly to it in this PowerPoint, but we can probably send one around pretty easily. Beep.
Okay, so this slide is similar to what Brittany did before. As it says, the CLT model would remove the cost of the land from the housing price, and you can have a CLT that is all rental, you can have a CLT that's all ownership, or you can have a CLT that's a combination of the two. But the fundamental fact is that the CLT would own the land, and the Mutual Housing Association would be either for all rental, all ownership, or a combination of the two, and that would govern prices as far as rentals and home ownership. So as Brittany said earlier, if someone owned a house, they would be paying for it a lot less than they would pay on today's market, and the CLT's agreement may state that once they sell it, they may only make 5% over the original buying price, so that the next person coming in would have the same advantage of buying a home without going into a hole to do so. You can have a limited co-op where the same principle stands. You own your apartment, but you're not paying the crazy prices they want now in New York City, and the same restriction would apply there. The theory we're looking at, or one of the models we're looking at, is having commercial space, so that the commercial space rentals, in a sense, would subsidize housing rentals. And the bottom line is that the land is going to be there forever to be affordable, and that the prices of rent and home ownership will be affordable for the population in the city, which is a lot less than the area medium income. Big.
So, you know, the bottom line is that the Community Land Trust owns the land, leases it for affordable housing, except this is affordable housing as we determine affordable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the deed, the lease, any documents or leases that are generated, all must require that the land, that the housing be permanently affordable, and that the land can never be traded or sold to the highest bidder on the private market. You know, Kendall was sort of speaking about commercial space, and I think that's one of the interesting things about how this plays out differently in different neighborhoods and different parts of the country. You know, some residential neighborhoods might not have a lot of commercial space, but a lot of the stuff we're looking at in New York City are residential apartment buildings with active commercial space on the ground floor. And so Cooper Square, for example, in the Lower East Side, can subsidize low-income housing because commercial rents are so high, and so they can rent out to commercial tenants, and that can help keep housing affordable. Next. I'm trying to switch it up, make things more exciting, but you know, whatever.
All right, so we know that we've lost a lot of housing because of rent stabilization, rent control going by the wayside. And part of the CLT model, as this states, is a tripartite governance where the tenants and homeowners have representation, where the neighborhood has representation, and quote-unquote experts and community leaders have representation. This way, community is involved. The people who live there are involved in how where they're living is run and maintained. And theoretically, you have community leaders involved, so no one will get the itch to try and sell the COT to a speculator and put it back on the market. All the models we've examined in class have this type of board governance set up, and they've all seemed to be successful where everyone has a stake in what's going on.
A really key component of this has to do with organizing, and you know, folks at Cooper Square and probably a lot of other community land trusts will say that organizing is what makes the difference and means success or failure, because you know, like with housing and property, there's going to be a lot of pressure for folks to sell out, or pressure from developers to try to get hold of that property. So if the community, if the folks who live there aren't super organized and are all on the same page in terms of how to defend their land and their control over it, even, you know, no model is perfect if the folks who are putting it into practice aren't perfect. Next. Beep. So, you know, we always hear money, money, money. When we want housing for low-income folks, money is a big part of the problem. Politicians say it's too expensive to create and maintain housing for low-income people. You know, when we see housing, it's generally in very small amounts. And so one of the ways, some of the ways that community land trusts, at least in the ones that we experienced and researched, keep it permanently affordable is this blend of incomes. So a real mix of incomes. I don't know if this is in other places, but in New York City, there's a lot of, they call it inclusionary zoning, where they'll develop, a developer who gets public subsidies will have to develop 20% of their units for affordable housing. And generally, that isn't very low-income people, or even low-income people that's targeted for, and very often those apartments will be pretty small and don't have access to the same amenities, and so on. So these types of models can use a real mix of income. So like 50% of the housing is for people who are extremely poor, and there are some market rate apartments that are used to, again, sort of help subsidize that cost of keeping housing affordable. Same deal with the commercial space, as we've already discussed. It's worth noting also that while you can get a lot of money from commercial rents, Cooper Square and others do prioritize helping out small businesses and community-based businesses. So the rents that they make available to commercial tenants that are owned by small businesses or, you know, sort of local institutions are significantly lower than they would be for, like, you know, McDonald's or something. And often, but not, I don't believe always, a CLT can have nonprofit status, which can help, significantly decrease the amount of taxes that they can that they have to pay, and increase the amount of money they can get from from foundations and other sources.
So here's the fun part: how do you get the money? We all know if you have federal funds that you have to, and federal and local government funds, you have to fit certain criteria. Otherwise, they won't give you the dollar. Private foundations, too, will put provisions on their dollars for you. And you may find that with individual donors also. CLT member dues is a little different because they have a stake in the CLT on a different level, not just financially, but hopefully from the heart. And basically, some of this stuff on this slide, we are getting ready to examine. We had one phone call with a gentleman who is who represents New York State here in New York, and he told us what to do to check his site to find out what we would have to do in order for him to approve an application for us. So it looks like we may have one government person on our side, but the problem, again, with federal funds or state or city funds, is that they want you to do certain things their way, and we have to find a way to make it fit our model of a CLT, because we are looking for a certain person to move into. We're not looking for somebody making $150,000 a year. We're looking for somebody living in a shelter system or living double or tripled up, making $7.75 an hour, if that much. So this is something we're still examining. And hopefully, after we do the survey in the next month or two, we'll have some more answers as to how these have worked around the country with the different models we're looking at. Beep.
So these are just some facts and figures from the Lincoln Institute National Study I mentioned earlier. The majority of CLTs they identified are not based in a specific neighborhood, but serve multiple neighborhoods or the city as a whole, or even larger geographic areas. Part of why these are really attractive and helpful in terms of keeping housing affordable is that they can use economies of scale. So you have many buildings operating almost like a multi-building co-op, so that they have a much larger pot of money in the bank, so that if a boiler breaking in the middle of the winter can sink a low-income co-op, because if they don't have the money in the bank to replace it, and they have to borrow a lot of money, that can cause them to leverage their resources. So the by having multiple buildings, you can sort of buy things in greater volume and save money that way, and also just have more money in the bank to prevent catastrophe from striking. Most of the CLTs that have ground leases, they range from 20 to 99 years, but 99 years is by far the most frequently used term, and those ground leases are renewable. 59% of the units in community land trusts that the Lincoln Institute surveyed are rehabilitated, while 41% are actually new construction. 95% of the CLTs that they surveyed do have units for home ownership, and 45% of responding organizations reported that they also have rental units in their housing portfolio, you know, which is significant because, again, people, you know, it's not that people can't own their homes, it's that they can't speculate on them and they can't turn around and after the CLT and their community has put a lot of work into improving it, they can't flip it. So it's not home ownership that's restricted, but rather speculation and profiteering. And, the overwhelming majority of the CLTs are not huge. 80% of them have less than 100 units in total.
How do you sell a CLT? I've been doing teach-ins and presentations, and I'm a Bed-Stuy girl, even though I'm in the Bronx at the moment. So what I do is I take Bed-Stuy as an example. It is a mixture of home ownership and apartment buildings, and that would be a federated, if I remember correctly, a federated CLT. So you would have part ownership, part rental. As Sam was saying, there's a certain amount of money that you're paying with your rents and your mortgages that goes into a pot for maintenance. So let's say all the buildings are oil heated. You're buying oil by bulk. So what you would pay as a homeowner to fill your tank would drop dramatically. If you are living in a home, private home with an elderly parent, and neither of you can shovel the snow, maintenance would be able to shovel the snow for you. So, excuse me. It is pulling the community back together the way I look at it, the way it used to be back in the 60s. Everybody's looking out for each other. You happen to all live under one housing association on one piece of land, more or less, that's owned by one person, but you work together, you pool your resources. It reminds me of the days my grandparents talked about during the Depression, how everybody shared food to feed their children, feed the men working. If your mother lived next door to my house and she couldn't shovel the sidewalk, my father shoveled it for her. He wasn't looking for any money. That's what you did. So to me, that's how I sell CLT. It is bringing community back together again, at a level where all of us can afford to live and live comfortably and as family and community.
Yeah, I think that's really important. The challenge, I think, is that community land trusts are not a big part of our public discourse around housing, and a lot of folks don't know anything about them. So selling people on them, getting them excited about it, whether it's low-income folks who could live in a CLT or elected officials who support you might need, or any number of, stakeholders in this process. It's sort of like, you know, I think that's what's really exciting about this way approach that Movement Catalyst has put together, is really thinking about, we have to, like, get people to sort of take a step back and look at this really differently. So some of the other talking points that we use have to do with, you know, the fact that they don't depend on government handouts, and as such, they're not going to get slashed after the next election when the Republicans come in or the Democrats and decide that housing for the poor is not a priority, or vetoed during state budget negotiations. It really circumvents a lot of the nonsense conversations you get about people who hear you say housing for poor people or housing for low-income people and automatically assume you're talking about government subsidies and handouts, because that's not what this is about. You know, many CLTs do take government funding in one form or another, and that's part of the mix of how they keep housing affordable. So one thing that Cooper Square says is that a lot of their tenants do have Section 8, and that's a really big help because then that's a definite check that's coming in every month, or hopefully every month, from the government that can help the CLT operate. But CLTs are a proven mechanism for communities to control their land and housing, and not have to worry about external or internal threats and not have to depend on governments. And they also, because they're really flexible, they provide communities with a lot more flexibility in how they shape their own housing, including you know, defining affordability in a way that makes sense to that community, not the HUD's area median income-based guidelines for affordable housing that in most places skews quote-unquote affordable housing out of the reach of low-income folks. Beep. So these are just some more talking points. You know, that it's everyone on this call obviously knows we're in a crisis and that there's just a ton of foreclosed, distressed, vacant property out there, and that CLTs create a mechanism by which the title can be taken to these properties. They can provide a path to legalize and secure homesteading. If folks are occupying their own homes after they've been evicted or foreclosed, or if they're occupying a home that has been vacant and a community-based organization has supported them reclaiming, this is a way, you know, then you have a target and a goal and an ask, and, you know, trying to move banks and developers, et cetera, to gift those properties to a CLT is, you know, sort of like an additional strategy besides asking for principal reductions or other things that sort of look at how can we make individual solutions instead of really changing the system.
See? No. So as I've said several times during this presentation, this is still a work in progress. We know what some of the models are out there. We're getting ready to find out who's still doing it, how they're doing it, what population they are working with, what problems they run into, what insight they've come up with that we didn't address in our class last semester. So this is going to be, as Sam wrote, redefined and developed, and it's going to hopefully blossom into something by the summer that we can say, look what we got. We can do this in New York City. So.
Totally. So we're open to comments, questions, critiques, feedback. I hope, you know, we're not really, I know folks might be in different places in terms of their experience and knowledge about CLTs. Some of y'all are probably know more about it than us. So we're not, it's hard to sort of think of what's going to be most useful for everybody. So I hope this was helpful and that folks either have more to bring to the table or got something out of this.
Yeah, I have a question. This is Peter Sabonis. I just want to understand that the community land trust model is, it seemed like you were describing one where the land is owned and then the building on the land is also owned. And it, at times it seemed like you were describing something where the community land trust owned the land and the building. And then at other times it's the community land trust owned the land, but say a homeowner owned the structure. Is that correct?
It's flexible, and, you know, a community land trust by definition will own the land, but sometimes they will also operate the housing that's on it or lease it to an outside party or lease it to homeowners. The sort of fundamental thing that makes or breaks something as a CLT is the existence of this separation between the land and what's built on it and this tripartite governance by which the CLT is controlled by three distinct entities to prevent, you know, if a developer offers a whole bunch of the tenants a lot of money and they decide to take that and sell the property, then that's not gonna take the housing out of the, you know, low income and affordable and community controlled sphere. Kendall, is that accurate?
Yeah, as I was saying, that you can have a community land trust where the housing on it, and usually there's a mutual housing association that's created. So you can have a community land trust where all the housing on it is apartment buildings. So everybody is renting their space. Or you can have a CLT where the apartment buildings are limited equity co-ops. Or you can have a CLT where the land, the housing on the land are private homes. or you can have a CLT where all of those different types of housings are included. So depending on where you are and your population and what's necessary and needed for you, that's how you model your CLT. That's why it's so flexible, and it's an answer that can work in many places, but you just have to understand what model will work best for where you are. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome.
This is Hillary. I have a question. I'm wondering if there's, so you said that models will work depending on location, geography, social, all that kind of stuff. Is there a more in-depth look into what kind of conditions merit what kind of model?
No, we scratched the surface of that in the class last semester. We examined Cooper Square. We examined another CLT in Boston, Roxbury area that they created for a multicultural neighborhood. And what we're doing this semester is we're reaching out to those that were in the report. Now, the report was written in 1996, so the report that Professor John Krinsky wrote. So we're reaching out to those we studied last semester, Kimberly, who's one of the students working on a project with us, did research and found 30 more. So we're getting ready to reach out to all of them, find out if they're still in existence for them, where they are in the country, if they're dealing with the population we're looking at of 20,000 and below, because that's usually, in this city, that's the lowest income, and maybe like 17,000. We're looking at really low income and to see who's working, how they've kept it working, who's not working, and what went wrong.
Yeah, but a lot of that, we're hoping to really generate some really interesting newer research into this and create not only more up to date figures and facts, but also ways for folks to communicate more freely and reach out to specific community land trusts whose characteristics might be similar to what different folks want to create in different places. Like Kendall said, the study that John Krinsky wrote for the Community Service Society was done in 1996. The Lincoln Institute of Land Policy study that I cited in the PowerPoint is from 2006. So, you know, the numbers are not super fresh, and many times the folks might not have been looking for what we were looking for. So we're hoping to generate some new and useful information.
I know that – this is Brittany. I know that Picture of the Homeless has collected some different resources and made them available on their website. And we, too, have been trying to collect resources, and I think we actually have a link back to the Picture of the Homeless site, but also just trying to collect things and make them readily available. I'll shoot out some of those links, including Picture of the Homeless and including some more information about different sort of third-way ideas that we've collected and put up on the web so that everybody can access that and look a little more deeply.
Thanks for doing that, Brittany.
Cool. Any final questions? I figure we should probably wrap up in a couple minutes, if that's cool. And
One question. This is Lauren Taylor in Chicago, working with the Chicago Anti-Eviction Campaign and also with Occupy Our Homes. We are planning on trying to do some home occupations this spring and summer, and, you know, this, of course, is a very interesting model to use for, you know, sustainability for all of this type of thing. I guess the only question I have very simply, and I guess this would either go to Brittany or whoever has links to share, is there any kind of, like you could say, documentation to show the, for lack of a better word, you know, the type of contracts or the type of, you know, actual documents that are used, either, you know, bylaws of the, you know, various groups or the different kind of contracts that they use with renters or homeowners or anything like that. You know, but actual materials that we would use so that we wouldn't have to, you know, get all this stuff from scratch, basically.
Lauren, I can answer that. Yes. In fact, there are some quote-unquote model ground leases that are available, as well as model bylaws, and I think I think they're available on the wiki that we've been putting together. I don't know if they're also on PTH's, but I can definitely highlight those for you.
Okay, and we have each other's email, so if there's some other specific thing that I need, I'll just reach out.
That's
a great question.
So this
are,
is
are
Rob.
People, yep, go ahead.
I just want to ask a question. I think this question goes to all of us on the call. It seems that this is a model or a CLT is a model that works. The question is, why aren't they more popular then? And I think that's a question we're going to have to grapple with as we try to sell this to folks. So we need to come up with a real answer that we're all on the same page with.
Briefly, let me, jump in on this one, because this is actually something that I've been discussing or that has been kind of discussed quite a bit among, you could say, my associates or my colleagues. But in short, I guess what we have to do is kind of convince people that the place where you live, you know, should not be thought of as a commodity to be speculated on. And, you know, we can see what the result in the last, you know, particularly 5 years has been with that mentality. And I know it's going to be a hard sell, because especially for, you could say, upwardly mobile or middle-class people, whatever you want to describe it, you know, we've all been led to believe that your home is like one of your primary assets. And if somehow we can kind of convince people that that model, 30, 50-year-old model since the end of World War II, is just causing, you know, just wreaking havoc in our communities, and we just have to rethink that. You know, we can – community land trust is a way to stabilize the housing, but it's not going to give you an asset that you can then go borrow money on for your European vacation, you know?
Can I jump in here? I'm 56. I heard you say 50 years. I grew up in a family where they strive to own property, and it was an asset because it was a place you knew you had. You would have a roof over your head, a place to sleep, some place to find food, and you were able to go out and get an education, go out and get a job if you didn't want to go to college, but you had a base, a foundation, and you were able to move from that foundation out into the world and be the best that you could be. Yeah, you know, they talked then about this is an asset, you can do this and that with it, but first and foremost, it was a foundation for a family to be a family, so the next generation can move on and the generation after that. We used to talk about passing that property down through the generations, a family home, not, okay, I got the kids out of college, I can sell this now, move to Florida, move back to the Caribbean, move back down south, whatever. We have to get people back into that mindset. Fortunately for me and a lot of folks I know, I still think of it that way. Yeah, if you need it in an emergency, it's an asset, but you have to get people back to thinking about this is your family's foundation for them to move forward in the world. I saw a commercial the other night where the young grandson came to visit his grandparents, and he's sitting on the stoop with his grandfather, and he said, how long did you live here? Your mom grew up here. I hope I can do that. And his grandfather's thinking in his head, I hope so too. And then they're going to a banking commercial about foreclosure and what's happening in this country. We have to get people back to thinking that way. You know, once we do that, I think a lot more people are going to say, yeah, this needs to be done, excuse me, because my family's future is based in this house, so my children have a foundation to move from and build upon.
Can I just add, Kendall, I think you hit on a great point, which is that even though the land is owned by the community, the home is actually owned by the person, and one of the key pieces of that is that that it's actually inheritable. There's nothing that stops the home from actually being inheritable, so like being passed down in just the way that Kendall described. So
right.
I think that, this is Sam from PTH, I think that Rob's question is really big and really important because there are a lot of answers to it, and there's a lot to it, and I wonder if maybe it makes sense maybe through email or maybe create a document that sort of like looks at the top, not frequently asked questions, but frequently launched assaults on community land trusts, like people explaining why they don't work or why there aren't more of them or why they fail, because there are a lot of possible reasons and a lot of reasons why nobody knows about them. So I don't know if somebody wants to take the lead on starting something like that.
Well, the, I
I don't know how exactly it works, but I think that there could be two ways. One is I think that people can readily add to the wiki, but I can double check about that. And then the second piece is that I'm actually hoping that maybe we can have more of these calls and conversations. So that's just another option to continue the dialogue, and this just be the first step.
Kendall's pointing a gun at my head for putting her on another call that leads to more calls, but we're cool with that.
Only because I'm supposed to be in Cypress Hills this evening with another group working on this.
Cool. Well, we promised
the evening
we'll be
doesn't end
minutes.
Till midnight.
And?
The day doesn't end till midnight. There's still six more hours.
Well, we promised people it'll be about 30 minutes, and since this is just an intro, I hope that this has gotten folks excited and we can continue the conversation whatever way makes sense. But I really appreciate everybody joining, all the questions and feedback and comments, and feel free to continue exchanging through the email chain that we've started, and et cetera. And I'll actually be sending out the links to the different resources. And, so I just want to wrap up so that we can at least keep it within an hour.
Awesome. Thank you so much, everybody.
Yep. Bye.
Well, thank you.
All right, everybody, take care.
Thanks.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.